The following tone is a reference tone, recorded at our operating level.
Everybody, this is First Take Kelly Tool, and you're listening to Squat Cobbler number 10, the decathlon of intros, because this is like the 10th time I've tried to do one. I'm at Kelly Tool, at K-E-L-Y-T-H-U-L on Twitter, and with me as always is
Mike, and you can find me at Official Pagan on just about everything. Kelly, my hat is off to you for finally getting through that. It took a couple of tries, but you're there.
Couldn't get the number. It was a flashback to trying to say Live 365 Loud and Loaded, which for some reason I could never completely master. Maybe that'll be premium content. People can hear all my failed attempts to introduce a show. But we're here to give you some recommendations. Mine'll be pretty quick, but it's a fun one. So this has picked up a lot of attention here recently. There's been a lot of folks talking about it. T. Scott Brave was the one that tuned me into it. He'd put a couple things out on social media around it, had posted some of the output from this app, and it was just amazing. And it is a app now available on both the iPhone and Android platforms, and it's called Prisma. And Prisma is basically Instagram filters on steroids. Unbelievably high quality filters to where you download the Prisma app and then you go ahead and you can either take your shots natively in Prisma and work with it there, or you can kind of pull in anything you've shot on your phone and apply a number of filters to it. The quality of these is simply amazing. I mean, when Instagram came out, when a lot of folks have been a big fans of the filters that they've had evolved, and there's a number of different packages out there that will turn your photo into a pencil sketch, turn your photo into a charcoal sketch, do an embossed kind of photo. These are just remarkable filters in all sorts of different ways. And you can get some incredibly professional looking creation from it that take one, you can take one picture and repurpose it three or four different ways and create very different things. I'll include in the blog post for this one, I was in Washington, D.C. recently, and there's some street art, two very large figures, very colorful, that are on the street, and just, they're highly graphic, and just by themselves, and I took a shot of that, and I put just that shot on Instagram. It's a great shot. It looks really nice, and it's very attractive art. But then you can turn around, and I did a Prisma version of it, too. And it's just remarkable, the quality of it that you get out of it. The only, I don't know if you want to call it a downside or not, I think it's perfectly reasonable, is if you run something through Prisma to create that new imagery in the bottom right-hand corner of your photograph, you're going to get a little Prisma box to kind of let you know that it was output from the app. But small price to pay, since it's a free app, but it creates just some really beautiful stuff. And T. Scott had shared it, and it was very, very cool to see. You can really do some amazing things. You can lose yourself spending a lot of time doing it. Now, Mike, I've seen some stuff recently that you've put out that's been really kind of good high-end graphic type stuff that kind of looked like it could have come from Prisma, but I'm assuming it didn't. Have you used Prisma at all?
Yes, I actually have used it. I didn't find out about it from the same source. A fan had sent me some weird drunken pictures through Facebook, and I saw the Prisma squid. Like, the pictures were atrocious, but the filters were beautiful. So I wanted to find out where that was from, and you know, the handy little Prisma box in the corner. I went, downloaded the app, and the photos that you're talking about, I think there's three of them that I posted, are all from Prisma.
Yeah, it's a really slick thing. I don't know if it's called a downside or not, but you don't really know what you're going to get entirely. You get they're fairly esoteric names of the filters, and you get the gist of it. You do know one that's going to, okay, this is going to come out largely as a black and white, more line drawing kind of look, or this one's going to be more heavily graphic or Picasso-esque or those. So you have a sense of it. It's really kind of a bit of a surprise to see, and its integration with Instagram is a snap. Upload it into Instagram, share it on Twitter and Facebook, et cetera, as well. but super easy to use, doesn't have a big footprint, it's a free app. Even some of the worst photos I have could be turned into something pretty cool looking.
No, so some of these filters are excellent. Like you said, the only real learning curve with it is some of the names are a little bit vague, and you know, but if you look at the little preview square that they give you, kind of get an idea of the color palette, like you were saying, and a general vague idea of what it's going to look like. A lot of times though, still, you really, until you apply a filter to it, you don't really know how it's going to affect your picture, or at least I don't yet know how it's going to affect my pictures. There was one that I actually posted today, which was a picture that was taken a little while ago that I didn't like. So it's funny how you said a bad picture. Someone took a picture of me while I was recording some guitar stuff. I'm going back a couple months ago. And I just wasn't really, like, it was a cool, conceptually cool picture because it was like a close-up of my hand with a slide on my finger playing this acoustic guitar. It just didn't look that great. So I ran it through one of the Prisma filters earlier today, and it looked really cool. It gave it kind of a sketch effect to it. So I posted that today. And there's a couple others. One of them, I think there's three that I have up. One of them was a picture that I took in Prisma and did all the editing there. And another one was an actual like band publicity photo of me near this graffiti that had been out before, but it looks really different with the Prisma filter on it. So it was cool to kind of repurpose an existing picture and make it look like something completely new and completely different. The Prisma square, just to get to something that you kind of touched on with it, the little Prisma square in the corner annoys me for like posting pictures, which is ironic because that's how I know it exists. Like I wouldn't have found this until your recommendation today, were it not for the fact that someone sent me some drunken photos. A workaround that, if anybody's interested, if it bothers you like it does me, that's in the corner, don't instantly upload it to Instagram. Download it to your phone and then upload it to Instagram, because then you can just crop it out. Not an official recommendation. I guess you could do that though, maybe.
I think all of that could happen.
Theoretically, if you don't directly upload it to Instagram, download it to your phone, I'm assuming you could then upload the picture to Instagram and just resize the picture the same way you would any photo that you're uploading to Instagram. I'm guessing.
Super exciting news related to it is they are working on video filters. So that could be some pretty amazing stuff if they actually end up doing that. I just can't imagine the processing power required to give the quality of stuff that they do. But there's a band.
I was going to say, because we're as Kelly said before, hashtag fuck Apple. We're definitely pro Android people here. And one of the things that I love about using Android is that I can get a relatively inexpensive unlimited data plan. And I have unlimited, not only unlimited data on my phone, but unlimited 4G, which you would really have to have, I would imagine, to use this as a video filter. Like you said, that's going to be a major killer of every single bit of processing of your phone, your data, your everything. A while back, I shot an entire music video on my phone. We shot, edited, my singer and I came up with this idea because making music videos is really, really boring when you made 100 of them. So we come up with these weird little things that we like to try. So her and I went out and we decided we were going to try and write, just we had nothing. We had no concept, nothing. We're going to go out, get materials, write a concept, shoot the video, edit it, and get it released all within, I think we gave ourselves 10 hours or something like that from start to finish. So we had to do it on our phones and stuff like that and use filters on our phones. And there was literally no time to upload the footage to a computer and then filter it or crop it or do any of that kind of stuff. So I have done like heavy duty editing of video on my phone, and it's turned out really well. Destroys your battery, destroys your data. If you don't have an unlimited data plan, you're going to have an enormous phone bill if you have an iPhone that month. You might as well just say like you don't eat that month, you just edit your video. But I would love to see these filters. Like I would shoot a video today with these filters. I can't wait for that.
And a group, Maris, has actually utilized Prisma to create a video. And we'll include a link to that in the blog post. Their song was Deep Blue. And what they did is they shot the actual footage. Then they dropped the frames per second way down. Then they, one at a time, filtered them up and went through and then reassembled them through there. So you're not going to get seamless animation, but they actually, there is a Prisma-based video out there. We'll include a link to it. So it's kind of cool to see. That's a somewhat crafty workaround. I recommend Prisma, the app.
No, that's an excellent recommendation. And honestly, once the video capabilities of it are there, other than, you know, kind of doing the workaround of taking it frame by frame, I would definitely use it. I don't care how much data it destroys and all that kind of stuff. To me, it would be worth it to get, if I can get an incredible looking video out of it. Because like I said, I've used my phone to shoot not just videos, but I hate to do this to subtly plug things, but I think for a change though, just to switch things up, I might delicately, oh so gingerly, perhaps put a little bit of a plug in here. There's a movie coming out called Faces of Snuff that our friend Shane Ryan helped put together that I directed a scene in. The scene that I directed, I shot that entirely on my phone, and all of the filters and everything that was done with the video was done on my phone. I would love to see what I could do for future projects with Prisma filters and stuff on video. That was a great recommendation. It's going to be hard to follow up, and mine is very, very different. So how much of a country music fan are you, Kelly?
To use the Alice Cooper scale, country music is the prettiest for you of music for me. I am not a fan. There is the occasional country song, typically by David Allan Coe, that I might like, but not a okay. huge fan.
Okay. Any specific David Allan Coe song you'd like to mention here?
I can't remember any. No.
No. Okay. I'm a David Allan Coe fan as well. And in fact, I actually saw him perform live in Philadelphia not that long ago.
He's still alive, huh?
Yes.
I wasn't 100% sure of that.
Okay, yeah, no, very much still alive. Yeah, it was a good show, actually. While he is not my recommendation, it kind of fits into that. So I'm a country fan, not in the sense that most people think of country. Like if you're thinking of, I couldn't even name a popular country artist, to be completely honest with you. But if you were thinking of like a Garth Brooks type of country, which is literally like the most current country reference that I can give you. Although I have no problems with Garth Brooks because his online store carries my music. So yay, Garth Brooks. So nothing against that guy. But I couldn't name you a popular country artist of today. When I say that I listen to country music, it is not at all what people imagine or they picture. It is not the kind of thing that would be played on the radio. It would be more something in the David Allan Coe type of vein. And one of my favorite artists, and he's a great guy as well, is Hank Williams III. Are you familiar at all with his work, Kelly?
I believe I'm a big fan of his Monday Night Football body of work, yes.
Well, that would be Hank Williams Jr. That would be his father.
Oh, then I'm not familiar.
Hank Williams, as a lot of people know, Hank Williams Sr., or the first, or however you want to put it, was obviously a famous country artist who kind of laid the groundwork of what we think of as country music today. And then his son was a pretty big artist as well, who did the Monday Night Football theme, as you spoke about. His son, though, and the grandson of Hank Williams Sr., started off as a punk and metal artist who got into country music in large part kind of being forced into it by record companies and things like that. And he's an incredible artist, though, who makes country music that, again, is along the lines of the type of stuff that most people would not think of as country music. Think David Allan Coe in his prime, like the first songs that you were thinking of that you couldn't say, but with more of an edge to it.
With more of an edge to it.
With a little bit more of an edge to it, yeah. So not only am I a big fan of his work and the one particular album that I'm going to recommend to people, but I also kind of have to note I never ever do this, but there is a little bit of bias here. And I know that seems so unlike me, but the tiny bit of bias that I have towards him is Hank Williams III was actually the first ever guest on Loud and Loaded.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I started the radio station, we had no content whatsoever. So we reached out to some artists, and I had actually, I'd crossed paths with him before before he got reached the level of popularity he's at now, where he plays larger venues and things like that. He was playing like small bars and stuff, and I was familiar with him from different punk and metal bands that he had been in. So I was pretty familiar with his work, and I went to some of his early country shows at like small bars here. And then I wrote for a couple of different music sites, and I had an opportunity to interview him on a couple of different occasions. And then when I kind of put it out there that I was starting up the radio station, he was actually the first artist to reach out and ask about doing an interview at a point where, like, just starting it, where I had nothing to offer him because nobody would know, you know, maybe no one will ever listen to this radio station. There's nothing to say that this will be a success in any way or anything like that. So he really did me the favor, not the other way around. Typically, you know, radio station is giving an artist a push. It was really the other way around. So I am a little bit biased in this instance, but his music is really great. It is not at all, when I say country music, what most people are thinking of with the country music, and I mean that in the best way. The album that I'm specifically going to recommend that people check out is an album called Straight to Hell. It is his third country solo record. And if you decide to check out his music, much like Alice Cooper, you really want to start with a third record in this case. His first solo country record is songs that he really didn't want to record, mostly by songwriters that were kind of forced on him by his record company at the time. His second record, which is what he actually considers to be his first solo record, is significantly better, but still really not developed to the sound of what I would say he is from this point forward. Again, much like Alice, who we're both big fans of.
Just like with Alice Cooper, this is really where you want to start if you're getting into Hank Williams III. This album really, and what's interesting too about it is it's really, in a sense, his fourth album. He was signed to Curb Records, which, if you're not a country music aficionado, which I am by no means a country music aficionado, this is something I found out through my conversations with him and through doing some research with him. Curb Records is basically like the biggest country music label in the world. So when they signed him, they immediately tried to mold him into, he looks and sounds a great deal like his grandfather specifically, so they tried to mold him into that sort of vein and push him away from the metal and punk rock elements that he had always brought to his music, which caused a lot of rifts between him and the record company, and that included some lawsuits over what was supposed to be his third album that he had turned in, which was a little bit more rock oriented, and they wanted no parts of it. So after that initial round of lawsuits was settled, he went back to the drawing board, recorded a new album, which he recorded in a friend's house, doing everything entirely himself, the production and the engineering and all that kind of stuff. And the album is genuinely just incredible. I'm not a big country music guy, and this was, you know, something before the bias sets in as far as him being a really cool guy. This is just a great album. It's just dark, gritty, sort of early, sort of proto-country rock type stuff. It's angry, and it's really just like somebody lashing out at what they see as sort of like the pop culture appropriation and misuse of their art form. It's him really lyrically looking around at, and musically looking around at, what country music is and what kids today would see country music as, and just being disgusted by it and lashing out at it on a record. And it's just angry and perfect. If you want, like, it's like this drunken, crazy hillbilly who's going to beat you up because of what you consider country music, and it's awesome. There's an interesting kind of tidbit with it, whereas Curb Records did finally approve and release this album. It is technically a double album. The second disc of the album, though, is only one traditional song and then a 40-minute medley that includes a couple of songs and covers that are linked together through weird, like, audio collages and ambient passages and things like that, which you can't help but kind of feel was almost like just a fuck you to the record company and forcing them to release something that he knew that they would hate. But another thing that's really interesting, if you want to look at, you know, what country music is today as far as being like hillbilly pop or whatever you want to think of it as, this was the first time ever, and this album, it's been out for a while, but it's not, we're not talking about a record that came out 30 or 40 years ago or anything like that. This was actually the first major country music release to ever have a parental advisory warning on it. And in very un-Walmart-like fashion, it was one of the first country music releases that Walmart refused to carry unless an edited version of the album was delivered to them. And I don't know about you, Kelly, I'm not a big fan of censoring music.
No, I'm struggling, though, to kind of, back to Mr. David L. Coe, I can't imagine a few of his recorded works probably couldn't make it too far without some sort of indication to the public to say, warning.
So this is where it gets a little bit different with David Allan Coe, and particularly his earlier works. What David Allan Coe would do is independently release the albums that had those more strongly worded songs on them. So those were not things that were distributed by his record company or sent out to mainstream record stores. Like, you couldn't walk into, you know, a Walmart or a big box retailer and buy those records, and you still can't today. But, you know, so that's what kind of made this interesting, like, because that stuff did exist. There's certainly, you know, equally explicit country material out there, and far more explicit country material out there than Hank 3's records. But this was the first time that a country music album had been widely distributed to retail stores with a parental advisory warning on it, and the first time ever that Walmart had actually turned down, and especially what makes it all that much more interesting when you look at Curb Records and the types of artists that they deliver. This is the first time Walmart, which is their, you know, the biggest outlet for this type of mainstream pop country music that Curb Records is known for, this is the first time Walmart actually took a step back and was like, we are not going to stock this record coming from you unless you deliver us some sort of censored version of this album.
I was going to say, so our listeners will not be going down to Walmart to get it. Where do you recommend they secure this music?
You can pretty much pick it up anywhere. I will say, and this is one of those few examples, just like the Boris and Merzbow record that I recommended, this is one of those few examples where I would actually lean towards telling you to buy it on CD if you're going to go and pick it up. And that's only because if you're going to get the vinyl pressings of the record don't have the complete second disc version of the album on there.
Cool.
So, and like I said, the second disc is just one traditional song and then the 40-minute weird patchwork medley. And I believe the song, the standalone song, is missing from the vinyl. And I know that there's also single disc versions of the album in certain retail stores that omit the medley. And I know that the edited version of the album, which you should steer away from completely because I really, like I said, I'm not really a fan of censorship, but they completely omit a song titled Dick and Dixie, which I feel is one of the high points of the album and shouldn't be missed by any means.
That sounds like a David Allan Coe song.
Well, to get back to the correlations between him and David Allan Coe, he has actually worked with David Allan Coe a number of times.
Yeah,
so if you like David Allan Coe and are looking for something that's a little darker and a little edgier, this is definitely going to be up your alley. And I really, really strongly, like, regardless of whether or not you like his country stuff, his metal stuff and punk rock stuff is excellent as well, and you should check all that out. But this is really, in my opinion, the perfect country album. This is, you know, just like Alice with Love It to Death, like, this is a near perfect album for me. Whether or not, I know a lot of people don't really like the second disc on the double album version of it, but nearly every song on the first disc is just perfect, and you should definitely check it out. There's also some really funny moments. I don't want to give anything away, because there is some funny little things that he did on there. Specifically, you mentioned how, you know, the Monday Night Football thing, his father has an association with the type of, you know, mainstream pop music that he lashes out so mightily against throughout this entire record. And there are some funny moments of interactions with his father and references to his own father's music on there that are quite hilarious in a dysfunctional family sort of way, including around that time his father had done a song with Kid Rock, who, you know, for any listener isn't familiar, started off as a rapper who became a southern rock slash country artist as time went on, and ended up doing a song with Hank Williams Jr., Hank 3's father, and he, you know, take some shots at that song on the album as well.
And for our listeners, you may have determined by the far through is that we've wrestled with a few technical issues on recording this particular podcast. Just to make sure, Mike, could you repeat the title of this album again, just so that I'm pretty sure we have it earlier, and I'll find out in the edit. But in case it's a little garbled, I just want to play it safe to make sure people kind of know the full title.
The title of the album is Straight to Hell.
That sounds pretty fun. It sounds really good, as a matter of fact. Although, sentences I never thought I'd hear. Person X is a darker, edgier version of David Allan Coe.
No, and honestly, one of the best. I highly recommend starting with this album to check it out. And then, you know, if it's up your alley, I would immediately jump into the heavier stuff that he does with his metal and punk rock projects. But if you ever get an opportunity to see him live, it is one of the best live shows I've ever seen. He's one of the few artists that I will go and see every time he comes through town.
Excellent. Very, very cool. All right, well, we'll just jump in real quick here to some social media recommendations and call it a show. So I don't know if I've ever mentioned to you, Mike, before, but there was a movie called Piranaconda, and I managed to get the actual prop egg from the movie Piranaconda.
So wait a minute. You have an actual movie prop?
I have an actual movie prop from the movie Piranaconda. It's the actual egg featured heavily. There were only two physical eggs. All the rest were CGI. One of them sank in the bay in Hawaii, and the other one is on my mantle. So I don't like to share that often, but yes, I happen to have that. But it's going to have company now, because recently there was a sci-fi movie called Tulantula that played, and they had a little contest beforehand where they were, say, they'd taken a shot. There's a scene fairly late in the movie where a young lady's coming into a laboratory, and one of these lava-breathing spiders is hanging from the ceiling, and they took that shot, and they said, hey, Photoshop yourself in, and we're having a contest. And so I took it upon myself to do so. I had a photo of me having a stare down with Kylo Ren, and I cut Kylo out and dropped myself in for there. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the 7 or 8 folks that won that contest. So I'm getting an autographed poster, which will include the highly coveted Steve Guttenberg autograph, will be on this poster, original cast, but also on this cast poster will be a young lady named Lauren York, who played a character that unfortunately had spiders pop out of her eyes towards the end of the movie. Some of the best spider eye acting I have ever seen by Lauren. Her signature will be on there, and she is an actress that's been in a number of different things. She's outstanding in Lava Tulantula. She's of the Mike Belinsky camp, in that her Twitter handle starts out at official. So she is, but instead of being at official pagan, she happens to be at official L for Lauren, L York, so at official L York, Y-O-R-K. And she's very cool and interactive on Twitter. I'm going to have her signature soon, posted by the Piranaconda egg. Very excited about that. Apparently, she's also got a happening Snapchat, and a lot of people recommend following her there, but I am an old guy, and I don't understand Snapchat. But if you young kids out there understand Snapchat and like to use it, apparently her Snapchat's very cool too. So follow her on Twitter, and you'll be able to get to her, connect up to her chat, if that's your thing. So my social media recommendation is at official L York.
You know, there's a lot of things that I have to say about your social media recommendation, which normally I don't think we really discuss too much. But in this instance, I really have to chime in here. How have we been friends for this long and done so many shows together, and you have never mentioned this, what was it, Piranaconda egg?
Well, you know, I'm a modest man. I don't like to kind of lord these things over people and do it. It's just been just something I had, you know, kept private until now, but I felt open enough not to actually share it. So it was just, the time was right. It had come.
You know, I really appreciate that you did that, and I have to say, not only am I jealous of that, but to have Steve Guttenberg's autograph, that's pretty fucking cool.
And Michael Winslow, I believe? Winslet? The sound effects guy. Whoever.
Oh,
the guy that does the
that's
Police
even
Academy.
Better, yeah.
So I don't know if he kind of did sound effects for the signature or not, but very excited to get that. And Lauren is very cool. Was the whole cast live tweeted during Tulava Tulantula. They were very, very fun.
So I also have a social media recommendation, and I'm going to, just like you, kind of, you took it upon yourself to trust me and to put some faith in the relationship that we've built over doing all these shows together, to talk about something really personal and this Piranaconda egg that you have. So I'm going to kind of talk about something I've never talked about on here before. You guys might not know this, but I'm in a band.
Really?
Yeah. And
that's cool.
Oh, thanks, man. And the name of that band is Pagan. And coincidentally, we have an album coming out later this year on Universal called Dead Girls. But that's not the recommendation. The recommendation, there's a singer of this band is a lovely young lady named Jennifer Renee Price. And I recommend that everyone follow her on social media.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram? Is there a primary that she likes to use? Or
She's mainly Facebook and Instagram, but I will get you all of the links so that you can put them up on the site. But she posts a lot of great stuff, and she is actually currently expecting twins, which is why, for anyone who doesn't follow me on social media, our friend Vex from the band Starscream will be filling in on the Dead Girls Live dates because she will not be able to do it because she will be giving birth to twins and then recuperating from the act of giving birth to twins.
And then living the life of having twins. You know, on paper, sounds kind of cool and fun, but you're immediately outnumbered with twins. I don't know if that's... wish her well with that. But yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, you get all that info. We will include that in the blog post, so you'll have Lauren's Twitter account and her Snapchat thing if you're into that, and all the other contact information for Mike's recommendation, and so we'll have all of that there for you in our blog post.
It's funny you mentioned Snapchat, though, because so many of my friends are on Snapchat, and I am too old to understand it. I don't get it at all. I don't know how to use it. People snap me, and then I'll text them my response to it because I have no idea how to respond to them using the app.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. And my daughter did the Disney internship program a couple years back and had taken a picture of some of the introductory stuff that was going on. I was like, oh, here are my set of mouse ears and certificate to kind of start as a Disney intern. Very kind of cool stuff. And she kept sending it in Snapchat, and I'm like, finally, I couldn't save the picture. I know you're somebody who's supposed to be able to screen capture it. I just couldn't get it. And I'm just like, text me the damn picture. So so that might actually be a pretty fun future squat cobbler, is that we need to find somebody in the squatosphere who is a big Snapchat proponent and have them on and see if they can convince you and I that we should be participants in this clearly ridiculously useful tool.
Yeah. I mean, all right, so I've only discovered one real use for it, which is people will snap, because I'm at Official Pagan on everything, so I'm Official Pagan on Snapchat as well, and people will send me snaps of them snorting suspicious-looking substances. And it's multiple people do this. Some of them are people that I've interacted with in person, and some of them are just people who, I guess, find me on Snapchat. So I kind of get that use of it, because I know that these short video clips you send only stick around for like 24 hours or something like that, or all they're available to view, and you can only view them a certain number of times, the people you send them to. So I can see where that would be useful if you want to remain employed. And you're sending people those, like, that's not something I'd want to put on Instagram or Facebook if I was ever engaging in that sort of activity.
Yeah, here's another trick for you if you want to stay employed. Don't freaking capture that stuff, film, and distribute.
Right, right. I like how we're not saying don't do that. We're just saying don't incriminate yourself when you're doing that sort of thing.
Capturing criminal activities seems unwise to me.
Right, right. Yeah, I again, I'm not going to judge anyone's, you know, life choices, but I can get, like, if you have to do that, like, if you have to film yourself doing that, I guess Snapchat is the optimal app to use for such a thing.
So, yeah, we definitely got to find somebody who gets this thing and see if they can get us.
Well, I have to assume that was not the inspiration, or at least not the only inspiration for the creation and use of this app, though. Like,
I have no idea.
it can't just be doing lines of coke. Yeah. Like, there had to be something else behind it.
I'm guessing, maybe. I don't know. I will give it props that it does have some very creative filters. So, always been one of the fun things on Google Hangouts is they have some pretty cool little features where you can kind of have party hat or birthday cake or all sorts of other sunglasses that can track with your video feed, and you can kind of do some fun little deals there. Snapchat, you know, blows that away in terms of some just amazing augmented reality kind of applying video imagery or animation across video imagery. Very, very cool stuff. And so that's very impressive, but I don't know. And it's disappointing to me because I've kind of, for most of the social media platforms, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those came through, I had a very good working knowledge of, okay, I get how this works. I can be competent in it. I understand how it works. Snapchat was the first one that came down the pipe that I'm just like, stay off my yard. I don't understand you.
Which is exactly how I feel every time I get one of these snaps. Because, like, I'll have to, you know, instantly text them back, like, whoa, that line was even longer than the last one, because those are the only snaps people send me. I'm sure there's other things people do with this app, but that's my entire experience with it. I'm texting people responses to snaps because I have no idea how to work it, because I'm old as fuck, apparently. And I don't know how it works. So I completely understand that you kids get off my lawn kind of thing with it. And it's weird because like I love, like Instagram is probably the social media platform that I use the most. And obviously that's all picture and video related. So you'd think I would take well to Snapchat, but I'm not.
Well, we will visit offline further on this, but I think there's going to be more from Mike and I on social media platforms, pros and cons, and the kind of content you expect from Squat Cobbler. We'll dig into that a little bit in a future show. And, of course, sometime in a future show, we'll give you a Squattymon update as well as we continue to work on what will soon be the greatest app of all time. But
right. We're not. In the meantime, though, feel free to keep texting me or snapping me, you know, suspicious activity that you're engaged in. I don't mind receiving those. I just don't know how to respond to you because I'm
just
old.
Be prepared for a text response.
Yeah. A text response, or if I don't actually know you, no response at all because I don't know how to respond to you.
And on that note, we're going to wrap up Squat Cobbler, I believe, number 10. We will be back in a couple weeks to do some more stuff. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
You are the only censor. If you don't like what I say, you have the choice. You can turn me off.
I love the Monster Dog songs.